Stop it. I bet we have the same therapist. I get. Wait, where does she live?
I'm like so nervous right now.
I'm so nervous right now.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It isn't me, Eric Williams. And my voice sounds a little tired because it was a big week. But this is another big week because it's a bonus fucking episode, y'all. A bonus episode so that we can celebrate the Broadway musical Lempicka and the composer of it, our guest Matt Gould. Now, he is also the co-writer of the musical, and Transparency is this was recorded like 3 days before the show had its closing announcement. It closes on May 19th. So if you are in New York City or planning on being there, go support. And honestly, when I read the announcement, I was truthfully so sad for Matt, but it also made so much of what he said in this interview about creating shit resonate even more. And a month-long Broadway show about a queer love story that stars Eden Espinosa, one of the greatest Elphabas, in her first Broadway role in 16 years. Honey, that makes it even more legendary. And I know there are theater faggotrinis out there that are just like salivating at the lore of it all. Now, if you were at That's a Gay Ass Live show, which is partly why my voice sounds like this, holy shit, it was the best one yet. And if you're in New York City, we are doing That's a Gay Ass Live Show June 28th. Truth be told, I'm not sure exactly when the ticket link will go live, but save the date. It is the Friday of Pride, and it is going to be bonkers, binge. Now, we're going to get into this episode with the Broadway composer and total mensch of menches, Matt Gould. Broadway legend Matt Gould is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Matt, can we say mazel tov for Lempicka and for you being a gosh darn star?
Thank you. I've never been called a Broadway legend before. That's huge. That's only for like Audra and Bernadette, but thank you.
I do think that when you give Eden Espinosa a star vehicle, I think the legend status is cemented.
Okay.
If that's okay to say.
Received. Thank you.
I also, have so much to discuss when it comes to the Broadway of it all, but I oftentimes like to connect with a guest who is a gay like me, but also might be of the same tribe. Matt, your show Lempicka deals with a queer Jewess, and your last name is Gould.
Baby.
Are you Julina?
Like Shabbat Shalom, honey. An early Shabbat Shalom, brother.
Shabbat Shalom, binge. Okay, so because we know that you are of the Jew girlies, I'm going to ask you a controversial question. Matt, were you bar mitzvahed? And
I
if
was.
You were, what was your theme? What was the party theme?
Baby music. It was a piano. The centerpieces were like baby grand pianos on rotating, like they rotated electronically. And bitch, that was in like 1992, honey.
She was before her time.
She was before her time.
We're going to do a full Steinway, which I do think is actually an inspired choice for a little gay boys bar mitzvah theme, because music can still transcend sexuality. Like if it was Broadway, that's a faggy theme. But if it's music, you can at least pretend that you don't like butt stuff at that age.
Totally. I didn't even know what butts were at that age. I was fully like in love with Stacey Winegrad. So It was.
Well, we're still figuring out the butt stuff, and that's a separate journey. But so then can you paint the picture then for a young Matt has gotten bar mitzvahed surrounded by pianos? I'm going to project onto the story that they're covered in sparkles.
Fully.
Can you tell us where geographically was this, and how long did it take you for you to actually tell the world you were a gay girl?
I mean, this was, I grew up in outside of Los Angeles, in a suburb outside of LA, a very conservative suburb, at a time when, the only gay thing was at Will and Grace. It was just starting. Mm. And it wasn't until my freshman year of college that I was like, oh, I'm bisexual, which was, for, look, fully, there's so many bisexual people. I am so not bisexual. I am so gay. But that was the kind of that was the gateway drug for me.
Well, and who among us did not grow up in a conservative area and think to ourselves, well, maybe it's just a case of the bi.
Yeah.
And some of us found out it was bi, 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 and it was a gay, gay guy. You say that you grew up outside of Los Angeles, and I think that it's rare that I talk to someone that's like, you know, grew up around or at least adjacent to the Hollywood community. Did that show business seep into any of your desires as a young person, or were you far enough away that it felt like not possible or not what you wanted?
It was far. It was actually far, because I lived on like the other side of the hill from where all that madness was happening. I've actually started to find it a bit of an enigma that I even found my way into theater and showbiz at all, because my dad was a fireman, like an angry Jewish fireman who, you know, would come home for, and he was from, my parents are New Yorkers. They moved to LA. They went there on their honeymoon. And, you know, my dad was not just a fireman, a paramedic. And he would come home from days, you know, just being like, today I scraped the body of a dead woman off the side of the road. So wear your fucking seatbelt. You know, it was like, that was that was my house. And I was like,
a Jewish firefighter though, I know. That seems to transcend. Like I hate when people are like, are there, cause I'm from Missouri and I'm from actually a pretty big Jewish community and people are surprised, but I am now going to do to you what people say to me, which is like, Jewish firefighters, do you think there are a lot of those?
There are not. There are not. It was all, the whole thing was very enigmatic. And which, you know, maybe explains how I wound up in like the Peace Corps, a Jew in Peace Corps. And, you know, it's all very confusing. But here we are.
Well,
we made
the Peace Corps, has a lot of bisexuals. I can only imagine, because those are the people who love to get dirty and have bravery.
Lots of experimenting.
Of course, I'm sure. Before we get into the Lempicka of it all, I do want to get just more of like this backstory is so interesting to me about this enigmatic upbringing that did lead you to Broadway, which is a very specific industry. Were you like a theater queen in high school? Were you starring in the shows?
I was starring in the shows. I was the president of the show choir. There was a big earthquake in LA in 1992. Our school auditorium caved in, and it must have been 93. And so I was actually going over to the other high school and like music directing the shows over there, because I was like, you know, I was the drum major in the band. It was all music all the time. Yeah, I didn't care about school.
Okay. That gives some more color, because part of me was like, are you the achiever type that is like trying to just be so good at everything to dismiss the gay? But it's actually, no, you were just so obsessed with music that it sort of took over.
That was it. Yeah. I mean, I that was it. I loved it. And it was, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know how old you are. You look young, especially with this beautiful filter over your face.
With the Zoom filter, I'm 34 legally. The Zoom filter looks more like 29, but I'm 34 years old.
Yeah, I'm 44. And I would say that, like, honestly, that difference of 10 years, and you interview a lot of people, so you know this, but like that difference of 10 years really was the difference between like when I was in high school, there were no gay kids. And gay was a 4-letter word. And like 5-10 years later, there's like a gay straight alliance and it's starting to become cool to be gay. And like all the kids are a little gay. And so, yeah, that sort of subculture of my school was my safety space. Even though we weren't talking about being gay, we could live in all of our grandness and it was okay.
Well, I think that's partly why the theater decision that many of us gay people take is because we can act larger than life while under the literal Ben Nye makeup of Fagin and Oliver. So can you just give us at least one starring role that Matt Gould played in high school that you'd be like, no, I fucking killed it?
I was Seymour, baby. I was Seymour in Little Shop. And motherfucker, this was at the time when they were still casting nerds as Seymour. You know, now they're casting A-list movie stars. And you're just like, how is that dude Seymour? You know, it's like we were nerds.
At least Jinx Monsoon is giving us a gorgeous somewhere that's green. But you are absolutely, there is an epidemic of hot Seymours. Not to say you and I are not hot, we are, we are more of the character variety. And I haven't done musical theater in a minute, but I think like if my dreams were to come true and I, you know, get my fucking stupidly rich sitcom life, I then come back to New York and I replace as Seymour, but the headlines will be back to the nerd is back.
Correct.
I'm okay with carrying the nerd flag proudly, because honey, I'm not Jeremy Jordan.
Babe, I mean, what? It's what about the hot nerd? And also like this is TMI, but like the nerds, we just give it better because we had something to prove. The pretty boys,
hello,
you know, the pretty boys, and I'm talking, when I say give it, I literally am talking about what you think I'm talking about. It's like we had something to prove. We had to like step up. We had to sort of like overcome all of the parts of us that like weren't the A-list. And I don't know, that's a thing.
No, it's such a thing. And you know what? Because you are such a gorgeous, chatty Jewish Kathy along with me, I'm going to get straight into the gay-ass podcast question, which is, Matt Gould, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame even, babe?
I think it's Rob Estes. Do you know who that is? You're like, I don't know who that is.
Rob Estes?
Yeah.
It sounds like a syndrome, but go on. I'm listening.
Yeah, no, there was this show called Silk Stockings back in the 90s.
Oh.
It was like the precursor to like CSI. Like, I don't know if it was a great show, but it was on at like 10 p.m. and I had a TV in my room. I got a TV in my room for my bar mitzvah. And so at 10 p.m. when I was supposed to be in bed, I was silently watching Silk Stockings for this. Because in every episode, Rob Estes would like get down into his boxers and like have sex with some, you know, potentially criminal lady. And, you know,
oh, sure. He's fucking the criminals.
Yeah. And so it's like, this is what we did back then before we had, you know, Pornhub and before you could like get it on demand. Yeah. You had to sit through Silk Stockings, including all the commercial breaks, until we finally got to the act in the show where he was going to stripped down
until the fucking habit. I'm obsessed that it's called Silk Stockings. It's my first obsession.
Bring it back. It's a musical.
Yay, your name.
No, it's
Silk Stockings. It sounds like the producers too, where they try to make Silk Stockings the biggest, the next Hamilton. There's also, I'm gonna be very honest with you, when I Google Rob Estes and I see these photos, this man can not only get it, but I would love to receive it. And I don't say that about every man. There's something that is so, I'm very famously into daddies. And he, to me, at all points of his life, I'm sure, he's 60 years old right now.
I know. I bet.
I mean,
think like 30 years ago. 30 years ago, he was like in his prime. He was 30. He was on 90210.
No, I'd fuck him at 60.
Right now, give it to me.
I would absolutely do it now.
Give it to me. Totally. Agreed.
Ooh, Rob. Well, thank you for your service in making Matt Gould a gay girl. I mean, when we picture you at this young age, were you, and obviously when you came out as bisexual freshman year, you had been dealing with, you knew deep down that you wanted to see what was under the boxers. Yes.
Yes. Oh, of course. Yeah.
But were you in denial then? Were you trying to push away the, I'm just like curious about the bridge between a bisexual freshman into a full faggotrini.
That's a good word. First of all, I had a girlfriend for 2.5 years in high school, a wonderful, kind, lovely woman who's still a dear friend now. And I mean, I think it's okay to talk about, even in high school, like there was an occurrence that involved another boy that happened. Huh. But it was just so, it was so bad then. And I remember thinking, oh God, what if I were to be gay? That would be a death sentence. That is death to me. And it was at the time. And even when I finally came out freshman year of college, when there were other gay boys around and we were in Boston, and it was a death that took place, because it was also the death of an idea about, like, well, I'm going to grow up and get married and have kids because that's what you do.
And, but listen, Matt, I have to say, like, everything you're saying is hitting me so hard, and I'm not at all discounting anything, because I do think when you were growing up, it was absolutely a death sentence. It was absolutely such a death of grieving that identity. But it's funny is that I definitely had these things probably less so, but everything you're describing, I felt the exact same way. I mean, it's part of it was because where I grew up, there was no out people except for one kid in my high school that was like, not, he was not doing us any favors. Mm-hmm. And I definitely remember grieving the idea of having children, having like, you know, and of course you have children. There's so many beautiful things that and full lives that we can live, whether that's children, whether that's, you know, getting married, whether that's just fucking whoever the fuck you want to, whatever it is. Like, it's like we can live these full lives, but you absolutely have, I absolutely grieved when I was younger, when I came out. I think that's what delayed my coming out, was coming to terms with the grief.
Yeah. How old were you when you came out?
I was right before my freshman year of college. I was about to leave, and I told my mom that I thought I was gay, and then my coming out speech for the next few months was, I do not want to be gay, but I am, and I'm learning to be okay with that. That's what I told the first few people, and it was the truth. I was really devastated. I mean, I was like, you win. It was like, I had enough years of trying to prove my, I also had a girlfriend, not for 2.5 years. I definitely did not have that fortitude. But, and like, by the way, I always, whenever I bring up my ex-girlfriend, just like you did with yours, I send her love and thanks, because it could not have been the best experience to be in a relationship with a fucking closeted. I took her to Dreamgirls on Valentine's Day. Like, what do you want from me?
I mean,
I
think I took mine to Showboat. So, like,
yours is worse.
Mine is worse. At least you're okay.
At least mine has Effie White.
Totally. Yeah. I mean,
not Showboat. Well, it's a really, I mean, it's so relatable. And I think that it's inspiring to know that you did go from the grieving period to now having this not only huge career on Broadway, but you're like really uplifting queer voices and queer stories. And I think that that is such an amazing full circle moment, which is why I want to thank you for my first thanks about Lempicka, which is, thank you for giving Beth Level another chance to shine.
She's I know Beth, and I know one of your other questions is like, who is your, if you had to save one, you know, character actress. Who would it be? Yeah, it's Beth. I mean, she is a gift to the American theater. And, you know, there's times in your life where, like, I don't know, I keep going through these processes where I'm like, I've seen it all, I've done it all, like, I'm done. You know, everything is just a repeat of something I've already seen. And Beth miraculously said yes when we asked her to do this role, and has just become such a dear friend and mentor. She is the real fucking deal, like as a human being. So don't thank me, thank her. I mean, she is a fucking miracle.
Part of my history with her is like very deep rooted, which is the first Broadway show I ever saw was The Drowsy Chaperone. And it was my first ever trip to New York. I was 17 years old. I was not out yet, but I definitely knew I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be in theater was, you know, what saved me. And I was obsessed with Sutton Foster. I saw Drowsy Chaperone with my dad and Beth Level, also Danny Burstein, but Beth Level just like knocked my socks off with how fucking funny she was, and of course how amazing her voice was. But I could just tell that she was my gay savior of the day and then of the year. And I took a picture with her after, and like ever since then, if I see her name in anything or see she's a part of anything, I'm like, it's automatically good, because she has that level of magic.
Yes. No, she's just, some people have a thing, and she has a thing. She's real. She's real.
So if we get into Lempicka, I think it's such a huge accomplishment to not only put any show on Broadway, but put a story that you've been working on for what, like over 10 years?
14 years, yeah.
So now you're what, like you're only a couple weeks out of opening. How do you feel to have gone through the 14 years of development? The show had the preview period. Now it's now open on Broadway. You're sitting here the day before Shabbos. How do you feel about it being the show being open and where you stand in the journey?
The words that I use are grief and gratitude, which I've learned are just two words that sort of encapsulate most of the big moments in life for me. A lot of people talk about opening a show on Broadway as sort of being like birthing a child. And that is, you know, I have two kids and I did not birth either one of my children. But when you bring a baby home, there's sort of this feeling of just like unending possibility and anything is possible. Mm-hmm. This wasn't like birthing a child. This was sort of like the way I imagine my parents felt when they stood in the driveway when I like drove off to college. And they were, you know, and you're sort of like, there she goes. I hope I prepared her. I hope she's ready. I hope the world treats her kindly. I hope the men don't beat her down. And I hope the women are kind to her. And that's what it's like. It's like sending your kid out into the world and like, see ya.
Well, there is a grief with that. I can only, you know, obviously I'm not a parent and especially not a parent of a college age child, but there is like the attachment I feel to my literal dog and just imagining that then going into a human person that you've spent all these years with and growing and their tears and then all of a sudden to release them like a show like this. I mean, you know, 14 years, that's a teenager.
That's it.
And now you've released her. Does it come in waves then?
Yeah.
That grief and gratitude?
Yeah. And it's, you know, I was talking to Nick Blamire this morning, another musical theater writer. And I said to him, I was just like, I wasn't prepared for how exposed this would feel. You know, it's not just sort of a light, fluffy show. It's funny. And there is light fluff in there, but it is a show about like a queer person. And it's not the version of a queer show where it's just like, we're being silly. It's like, I don't think I realized how radical it was until like the week before we opened. And I was like, oh my God, we're doing like a really real queer love story. And people have feelings about that. And it's a woman's story. It's about the inner life of a woman, of the feminine parts of us. And people have really strong feelings about that. And some of them are like, oh my God, this is my safe space. And some people are like, I don't like this.
It really is interesting, especially as a creator, to watch those divisive reactions. And I want to give a shout out to an amazing composer friend of mine who is a big fan of yours and Lampika. His name is James Kennedy, and he is really doing an amazing job of spreading the gospel about Lampika. And so I just want to give him some love because he's been very supportive of me and this podcast, and he's a very amazing writer and musical theater composer himself. But on the opposite side of it, I think it's so smart the way that the marketing has sort of leaned into that divisiveness. The post that Lampika had recently, it says true art sparks debate, and then it showed two different pull quotes from Ben Brantley with a positive reaction and Jesse Green with a maybe not as positive reaction. And I just think that's really smart to lean into how Lampika herself had very divisive reactions, and now you stand here with a show that is sort of polarizing to a degree. What do you do as a creator? And I think I need to hear this as someone who also puts, you know, writing and work out. What do you do for yourself to feel proud of the journey and the product while knowing that some people are not going to have the 10 out of 10 positive reaction that, of course, our egos would like?
Well, I think anything that everybody loves is suspect, first of all. That's the first thing. And I also think anything that's sort of like, it was okay, that's the death of our culture. And that is the crap that we as a culture often celebrate, because doesn't require us to look at ourselves. Doesn't require us to ask questions of ourselves or the ways that we are complicit in the world in which we live. And so in some way, you know, I have been in processes where I have reached the end goal and I've gotten reviews that were not kind, and I've gone, God damn it. But that's not the show I wanted to make. I didn't put the show I wanted to make on that stage. Because at every point in making a musical or making anything, there's a million people, you know, in your ear. Well, what if it's this? And what if you do that? And maybe you cut that song and move that character, and that character should be a boy, and change the title and blah, blah, blah. And this time I was just committed to doing the show I wanted to do and that I believed was the show that we should do. And so I think somewhere in me as a 44-year-old who's like, I don't know, I've lived through life. I've had successes and what we would call failures. And I read the reviews and they hurt my feelings. And then I went, but God damn it, that's my show. That's my show. That's my kid. That's my kid. So now we're going to do everything we can to make sure that the people who need that get that. Because on the opposite side, and also as a culture, we love to dwell on like, oh, well, he didn't like it. He said I was ugly. And that's it. And that's the story that we have about ourselves. I'm ugly. As opposed to the thousands of other people who are coming and banging down the doors and writing to me and our producers and to Eden and to Amber every night saying, this show changed me. I've never seen myself on stage. I've never felt this safe in a theater before.
It's also, I think, why there is such a cultural admiration for artists and creators, whether that is the writers or the performers or whatever, because it is so vulnerable and scary. And I mean, the Broadway market is brutal. You have to have such a strength of conviction. And I just hope that, you know, it sounds like you are, but I hope, you know, you are able to take the time to really just be like, oh my God, I really feel proud of myself.
I do. And that is also the benefit of time and age. And I know I'm living inside of the dream of eighth grade Matt. When I was in eighth, like this, that was the dream. This is it. I want to go to Broadway. I didn't know what the hell it was going to look like. I didn't know if it was ever going to happen. There have been times when I didn't think it was ever going to happen, but I'm living inside of my dream right now. What they don't tell you is that a dream is just that. Like it's real life, and real life is messy, and real life is hard, and real life has sad moments just as it has happy moments, and they come and they go. There's this campaign a couple of years ago where, you know, it was about, and the great campaign, it gets better. They're telling little, you know, young queer kids, it gets better, and it does get better. But also what I've learned is like, it actually doesn't get better. I just get better at dealing with it. It doesn't necessarily get better. Like that's the nuance of like, that's what artists have to do.
We have to dealing with it.
I just get better at dealing with it.
If the full phrase is I get better with dealing with it, my full phrase is I get better dealing with it through Claudia, my therapist, and we thank her.
Baby, wait a minute. My therapist's name is Claudia. Stop it. I bet we have the same therapist. Where does she live?
I'm like so nervous right now.
I'm so nervous right now. Okay.
So here's the deal. This is why it could actually be the same person, is that I live in LA, but this therapist lives on the East Coast because she is licensed in both New York and California. Does your Claudia live on the East Coast?
No, she lives in Taos, New Mexico.
Oh God. Okay, we got out of that nightmare pretty fast. Can you imagine and by the way, I'd be like, fuck, and I thought I was the star fucking patient. Now she's got Matt Gould with a fucking Eden Espinosa Broadway gorgeous show with like this set of dreams, the music of Tony's Biggest Wishes. Okay, we have different therapists.
Good
so
job.
We at least
Thank
cleared
God.
The air.
But Claudia, yes.
Wait, you know what? I do think that colors all this experience too that I'm interested in is creating a Broadway musical, of course, is what I would consider one of the most difficult things to do in the entertainment industry, but also you're doing it while being the father to two gorgeous children. Did you, aside from the struggles of putting up a show while, of course, you know, having a whole life, I'm curious as a queer person, did you always want kids or
No.
did it sort of morph over time? Yeah. What was that like?
Well, I did want kids when I was young and straight. And then when I became gay from Silk Stockings, I was, you know, I think when the gay thing happened, I sort of resolved myself to like, okay, that's not my path. So I'll travel to Mykonos and I'll have dogs and live a fabulous life. And then I got married to someone who wanted kids. And I was like, I don't know. But we had kids and I immediately became like super dad. Just not to say that I am a super, but just to say that it became everything.
You leaned in.
I leaned in. I was like, oh, this is for me. I mean, I'm in a friend's office right now and the kids are actually out there tearing it apart. The kids are everything, and the kids are, they just become the reason for all of it. And
do you think any of something I'm noticing in some of my dear friends and siblings who have kids is that what seems to be really beautiful, in addition to, of course, the big challenges of parenthood, is the perspective it gives you. Was that a part of it for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it just becomes about, it's just bigger. You know, there are things in life that just remind you that the world does not revolve around you. And certainly in this industry, in some ways, you have to have a little bit of delusion and you have to believe that you are the most important person and that what you are fighting for is worthy and all of those things. And that's sort of how we get to where we get, how we make the things we make. But at the end of the day, Galileo and Apollo don't care that I'm making a Broadway show. They want their daddy to sit on the couch and cuddle with them and show up. And that is an important facet of my life, just in terms of keeping me rooted, because I don't think that you can enter this arena and be floating up above and be sort of like, me. I think people become cuckoo, and I don't want to become cuckoo.
I do not. Whether it's children or a new prescription, I will do anything I can to, because sometimes I feel I'm like, I can see anyone becoming cuckoo, because it's just the world right now, period, is cuckoo.
Uh-huh.
But we have to do anything we can to get that grounding. And I think it's so amazing. What for you, parenthood, has there been anything that has surprised you or been either much more or much less challenging than you thought it would be?
I think, first of all, I don't know what the hell I was doing with my time before I had kids, because I am more productive now than I ever was before there were children. And yet I have no time. And I think there's something about, I mean, this is true in writing too, or in creating. Sometimes there is something about restriction that forces creativity. I have 30 minutes to fix this song. Go. I don't have 9 hours, because with 9 hours, I'll sit around and I'll make a sandwich and I'll eat and I'll browse on the internet. You know, that is me. And it's true. And look, art and creation does take time. But then there's also a time when it's like, it's skill now. This is just about get it done. It's Tim Gunn on, make it work.
Make it work.
No, uh-huh. It's very Tim. God, that's so well said. Because I think when I have a full day, and this is a very privileged thing to say to someone who has a Broadway show running and two kids, but when I have a full day and I don't have a very clear either a recording or a work thing or a boop boop boop, and I have to create the schedule myself, it's very easy for me to then drown in the to-dos and then just sit there and do nothing.
That's
right. And it feels not good. And I think giving those windows of getting things done is one of the only nice sides of being so incredibly busy, is that you've got to get shit done when you can get it done.
That's it.
Well, I do want to ask you, since we did get into Beth Level as the character actress that you would save, can we manifest, what would you like to manifest for Beth Level to do to save the world with her magic performance skills? What is Beth doing?
What's her next show, you're asking me, or just what is she doing in the world?
What is her next show? Is she staying on Broadway? Is she going to film? What is she doing?
I feel like Beth is a Broadway girl. I really do. You know, and I've asked her that. I've said to her, why didn't you move to LA? And I mean, I don't want to speak on her behalf, but she is a creature of the theater. Yeah. And she's the kind of person who I'm like, I mean, I don't know if she'd ever wanted to, but I'm like, you, you, you create vehicles for that lady, you know, or you, you know, and sadly there are not a ton of vehicles for women of a certain age. I have this dream about like writing a musical for sort of older, like a sort of older crop of actors, which is hard for me.
The Hello Dolly of 2020s.
Yeah, totally. Because I don't want to, I love Hello Dolly, but I'm also just like, we don't need to see Hello Dolly again. Like there's more to say and there's more to make. So, you know, I have dreams about that. And she's someone who I'm like, I want to create work for that lady. I want to do more with her. So, I hope that
you
she's
going to inspire me to, I'm going to reach out to her and even just let her know what she has done for me. And maybe with the dream of having her on this podcast, but just like, I love that woman with, I mean, she lives in a very important place in my heart. And I don't say that about a lot. There's obviously like, as a gay guy, I love pop culture and I love certain things, but there are certain people that actually spark like an emotional connection. And she is absolutely one of those people.
You should write to her.
I will.
For sure.
I just need to do it.
Also, she needs to hear that.
No, she, and she does. I think anyone does. And it's easy to just assume that they don't want to be bugged. They don't want to boo boo boo. One of the final things I want to say, as we sadly don't have too much time left, is Matt Gould, if the very hot star of Silk Stockings.
That's it.
If the very hot star of Silk Stockings, Rob Estes, has made you gay, what is keeping you gay today? Is it a porno, a Broadway star, a ensemble member, a sandwich? What is keeping Matt gay today?
I mean, this is, it's not a funny answer, I guess, but I think it's just there is something very profound and like holy to me about getting to live in the space in between, in the gray space. And that is what this life has afforded me. It has afforded me the opportunity to realize like, oh, I don't have to do what everybody else does. I don't have to have that life. It doesn't have to be the picture that I was taught was what it is, because it never was that. Even though that was what we were taught, it isn't happily ever after. I am afforded the opportunity to live or to challenge myself and therefore the people around me to live as truthfully as I can. And baby, I have fucked up a million times and I have lied and I have cheated and I have done things that I'm not proud of. But like that, what brings me back to my gay and what gay forces me to do is to look again and go like, no, you have to go back to the core. You have to go back to who you are, who you really are.
And be okay with the gray. That is the magic of being queer, is we were afforded the luxury of being cast out by the mainstream straight hetero culture and forge our own fucking path.
That's right.
And that is what you are doing. And I aspire to continue to lean into the gray and know that the black and white is not where it's at. And being gay is the slay. Matt, so beautifully said. I'm really going to like listen to that clip in times of need. And before we officially log off, can you tell us where to follow you and where the fook they can get their Lempicka ticks?
You can follow me at Fake Matt Gould on Instagram. And on my TikTok presence is growing. And you can get your ticks at lempikamusical.com. Or anywhere Broadway tickets are sold.
Yeah, baby. Congrats, Mazel Tov on the show. And I just am so grateful you came on. And I'll see you on the Great White Way.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.